C1AP. Number 6A.
We come to the next vision, the second vision, the vision of life. And this is the vision when the Lamb opens the seven seals of the book. It is showing here the divine analysis of being. See, up to now, the vision only said that there is the Infinite One sitting on the throne, and that there are seven spirits round about the throne. But what those spirits are, that was not yet explained. So now in opening the seals, we have an opening of the vision of what the seven spirits are, of what the sevenfold nature of God is. So we find in the seven seals the presentation of the sevenfold nature of God. And always when we present a new subject, then we present it in the word order, because it's the unfolding order, the creative order. So this vision is set out and laid out in the word order, going from mind up to love. Again, I'm not trying to interpret all the various symbols. John Dolly has done that. I just want to run through it in order to bring us up to the point where then really Mrs. Eddy starts in with the 10th chapter of Revelation. But we know that when she speaks and refers to the seals and to the opening of the seals, she makes an important statement. It's there where she says that in the opening of the sixth seal, typical of 6,000 years since Adam, the distinctive feature has reference to the present age. Meaning that if the sixth seal is 6,000 years since Adam, then the first seal is 1,000 years since Adam, the second seal is 2,000 years since Adam, indicating really that sense that there are 1,000-year periods, and that each period was really revealing through the Bible one further aspect of God. So we encounter here a resume or a summary of the 7,000-year periods. And that will be rather interesting again, because again we'll see that the important break is between the 5th and the 6,000-year period, leading to the 7,000-year period. So the Lamb that was slain was said to be able to open the seals. And so the Revelator says, and I saw when the Lamb opened the first seal, what happened? We have the tone of mind. Opening of the first seal, the first beast said, "Come and see." What? And he saw a white horse. White was always standing for either the purity of spirit or for the white light, the light of mind, according to the context. Here it is, a white horse, and it is here mind, namely the horseman riding that horse is described through the qualities of mind, namely that he that sat on this horse had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering. So he had a bow to conquer. Mind is that which goes out and conquers. Mind is the mind power that goes out and establishes the creative sense of being. So you have here a sense that first, in the first thousand-year period, the creative sense, the creation myth, have been dealt with and shown that mind is the only creator, and that that creator is such a power and is like a bow, like the bow was also very often a symbol of the seven, like the rainbow, and showing that within that one light really is the whole measure of creativity, that if we touch mind, that then we really touch the creative ability, which once it starts out with mind, it unfolds and unfolds in a definite order until it reaches the seventh day of creation. After that, the second seal was opened. And it is said, the second beast said, "Come and see." And he saw a red horse. You remember red already as a symbol for blood, and was very much always a symbol for warfaring, which always was shedding blood, was always a symbol of the counterfeit of spirit. And so here, that red horse, and we had the red horse, to him that sat thereon had power to take peace from the earth, and a great sword was given unto him. So here we have the sword, which is usually the sword of truth, but that sword of truth is usually the two-edged sword. And just as Mrs. Eddy speaks of the sword of truth and of the sword of spirit, here it has the tone of spirit, namely as that which can separate, just separate without really destroying error. And so it was given to him a great sword to take away peace from the earth, because spirit is always that which leads the warfare, and in leading that warfare brings about crisis, chemicalization, it brings about the mourning, the second beatitude, where all that is taken away that does not belong to reality. So we have here also the second thousand-year period, really, of separating of the Noah and the flood, which showed that it took away the peace and brought the flood, but that when the flood was over, that then we had a sense of great purity and singleness of purpose. Then it comes to soul. There again, it is said that the third beast said, "Come and see." And what he saw was a black horse. Now we have a black horse, and black is used as a symbol for having no identity, because black is no color at all, so it has no identity. And therefore it is shown here that he that sat on that beast, on that horse, had a pair of balances in his hand. Very often in the Bible, when the symbol of balance is brought in, it had that sense of the balance of soul. And that balance of soul meant what? It meant really that which can weigh evil against good, which can weigh a situation and find out, is it good or is it evil? It soul can measure everything. And what it is saying here is that a pair of balance he had in his hand, and said to him, "See, thou hast not the oil and the wine." This is typical for soul. That is brought out in many of biblical stories in the Old and New Testament, in the New Testament especially, with that parable of the wheat and the corn, of the wheat and the, what is the other one, the wheat and the tares, yeah, where it was shown that the wheat and the tare grow together for a while, And then comes the time of harvest, where the tares are gathered into the barn, and the wheat is then burned up. So at that point we see soul which does what? Which waits until the creative sense of mind is at work, until spirit begins to separate things, and then soul comes and says, all right, that which is wrong I'm going to burn up, that which is right I'm going to gather into the barn, so that nothing good is hurt in that process. Remember in that parable, Jesus said that when the disciples came and said, shouldn't the tares be uprooted? Jesus said, no, wait, or else you may be in danger that you also uproot something which is good. So let it grow side by side until it becomes so clear and so definite that you are not going to uproot anything which is good, or that you are going to gather something which is evil. A terrific rule that we should always somehow notice in our daily life. We always come along situations where we don't quite know what is good, what is evil, or where we feel something is going wrong and that should be destroyed. The rule, the balance of soul says, let it grow. Don't interfere too quickly. Don't interfere humanly. Let it grow. What is evil will show itself forth as evil. What is good will turn out and will identify itself as good. Let the Christ idea work that out. Don't interfere with a human judgment, with your human weighing, with the human balances, with the human measuring. Don't interfere. You are not God, so don't try to play God and try to play that, to be that judge which knows so clearly what is good and what is evil. So let's, he more or less says, let that rule of mind, spirit, soul have a chance so that we don't uproot too early that which may be good and turn out to be a blessing. So many things which we think they are evil in our life or in our experience turn out to be the very best thing. Well, therefore, let the balance of soul rule the situation. Then he saw the fourth seal that had to be opened, and the fourth beast said, come and see. And he saw a pale horse. Well, a pale horse is neither black nor white. It's so indefinite that it has no sense of absolute value. So he began to see that he that sat on that thing that had no absolute value, that he that sat on him was death, and hell followed him with him. Discord followed with him. If we are neither cold nor hot, if we are so indefinite about our values, if we have no principle to stand upon, if we are so teeter-tottering constantly in our lives, say teeter-tottering? Oh, good. That's a pale horse. We must have an absolute principle and an absolute foundation on which to stand, or else hell is let loose. Discord is let loose. And you get the wonderful sense that God is principle, and therefore principle brings harmony. But if we don't rest on that principle and sit on a pale horse and teeter-totter in our lives, then there will be discord. So that the fourth part of the earth will be killed with sword or with death or with the beast of the earth. The whole personal sense of things will just be discord. And that is actually what we could see in the 4,000-year period so much. All that kingly period and then the prophetic age was all showing that these kings just didn't have a sure foundation, that they were making agreements with Egypt and with Babylon and with Assyria and with every other one. They were playing game in politics, and they didn't follow one straight principle. And the prophets would always pop up and say, now you must have a principle, you must follow principle, and not make politics in the world. So they were riding a pale horse, those 4,000-year characters, those kingly characters, except naturally David and Solomon to a great extent, but all the other kingly period that went from 900 B.C. right to the time of Jesus, it was all that sense of teetering between the various foreign powers. They were paying money to all the various powers so that they were not attacked and so on. They were constantly under the suzerainty of another power. They were never standing on a divine principle. The prophets would always say, return to God. Return to God. That was their great war cry. Return to principle. Yeah. So here the Revelator would bring out that sense that God is principle, and that if he has that sense of principle, that would show that the false sense of having false foundations, resting on false theology, resting on false government and false systems, that would lead nowhere. Then came the opening of the fifth seal. I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God. You see, the martyrs. Yeah. Can you hear the 5,000-year period? 5,000-year period was the period of the martyrs, where the Christians were slain all over the place. They were put to the lions, they were crucified, they were burned, and so on. They were all those Christians that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And these souls were crying, how long dost thou not judge and avenge our blood? Isn't that what we hear always? Why doesn't God intervene? Why is it that God does not intervene in all those injustice that goes on in the world? Why is all that injustice going on in all those countries where the people are slain, where persecuted for their conviction? Why does God not intervene? The religionists say, is there a God? Where is there a God if he lets all these things happen without interfering? It's the same thing as here. All those Christians are crying out and saying, is there no justice? Is there no God that he would really avenge us? How long dost thou not judge and avenge our blood? And white robes were given unto every one of them. Well, that means they were pure. White robes were given. They are seen to be innocent, but they were not saved. It was said to them that they should rest for a little season, that they are not going to be saved on the ground of what they did. Because, you know, the 5,000-year period was that period where they believed, so to say, in the bodily resurrection. They first of all expected the second coming of the Christ, that Jesus would come in the bodily figure and say, now I'm coming, now I take over the world, now I'm going to oust out the Romans, and I'm going to judge all the enemies. And they were expecting Jesus' second coming in a bodily form. And so that was not the case. And the Revelator wanted to show them and said, that's a wrong proposition you ask for. Jesus is not coming back. He is always going forward. He's not going backward. You are thinking backward, but Jesus is going forward. And therefore, Jesus is not coming back in the old form of a body. His future is something else, namely his future is the Christ science, not Christ Jesus. So he said, well, you are white, you have not done anything wrong, but something is wrong in your consciousness, namely, you are asking the wrong question, you are expecting the wrong solution. You are expecting, really, the bodily resurrection instead of the spiritual resurrection. And the spiritual resurrection, he shows right afterwards, is naturally Christian Science. You should resurrect yourself out of the belief that you have to deal with a peopleianity and not with a Christianity. That Christianity has to do with spiritual ideas and not with people and bodies. So, finally, it comes to the sixth seal, the opening of the sixth seal. And it is here where Mrs. Eddy says, as I said already, that it is typical for 6,000 years since Adam. The distinctive feature has reference to the present age. So the opening of the sixth seal has to do with our 1,000-year period, with the 6,000-year period, which is the period of science. With the advent of the 6,000-year period, with the first enlightenment that came in around about the year 1100 AD, where the beginning of science, the enlightenment, came in slowly, as we have seen last year when we went through the subtones of the 1,000-year period, until finally it gathered momentum and brought out at the end of the 6,000-year period really the Christ science that would save the world. So in the sixth seal, it is said there was a great earthquake. Now really we have the overturning. At this point really we get all the earthquakes. The sun became black, the moon became as blood, the stars fell unto the earth, the heavens departed as a scroll, every mountain was moved out of its place, everyone hid himself in the dens of the rocks, for the great day of wrath is come, who shall be able to stand? Wonderful description, huh? How a paradigm shift as the one that has been ushered in through Christian Science just unrocked the whole foundation, just rocked the whole earth, rocked the whole world consciousness, instead of building on the sure foundation of matter, as they believed, there came in a completely new view that the basis of being is spirit, and that science must be a spiritual science and not a material science. This is a shock to the whole concept of the natural science, and it comes as a shock. It really puts everything out of place, so that the sun became blood and so on, as it is said. A terrific picture of how everything has been turned upside down, that the Christ science brings in a complete new world view. And as I said before many times, and we'll say again, because that's important, you can see while the first five seals, with the first 5,000-year periods, they had really each one a very short description, just a verse or two. But when it comes to the six that has to do with that which will come to pass after the time of Jesus, then you have a long, long chapter. Actually, it goes over many, many pages in the Bible, and you have this terrific description that there is a paradigm shift, that a new worldview is opened up, that everything is turned upside down, and then he gives a description of what we call the diagonal, namely that this new vision brings in the Word as the Word, the Christ as the Christ, Christianity as Christianity, and science as science. Establishing there, when one deciphers or decodes the symbolism. He shows there what you had on your blue page five. You have there what he's going to show. He's going to show a terrific big picture, namely the Word as the Word. He brings in the four angels, the four corners of the earth, the four winds. You hear at once the calculus coming in. For the first time now, the calculus is developed in detail, so as to show that the knowledge of the divine infinite calculus is the safety against every error. So he says what the Christian Science brings in is a divine infinite calculus, first of all, Word as Word. The Christ as Christ, he then shows that Christ translates itself to each one as the individual good. It says, hurt not till the servants of God are sealed, showing that none will be hurt that is taking up that calculus of spirit, that no matter what the earthquake will be, no matter what will shake the world of the 6,000-year period, no matter what will happen now, it is shaking the world, but it is not going to touch those who have a spiritual consciousness, the servants of that are sealed. And then shows the coming in of true Christianity as Christianity, namely that then universal salvation will be demonstrated, that then Christianity will go away and Christianity will take its place. It's there where the 144,000 and a great multitude were sealed with the seal of God. And finally, you have Science as Science, where he shows that in the omni-action of principle, principle and idea is one, and that this wipes away all evil. It is as if somehow he had foreseen the time in which we live and said the moment really Christian Science is brought into consciousness, then there will be an earthquake.